You're listening to Sportsnet Today on the official home of your Calgary Flames. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Welcome to Hour 2 of Sportsnet Today. No Logan Gordon today. He's in at 4 o'clock with Steinberg. My name is Peter Klein. Thank you very much for making us a part of your Monday afternoon, coming to you from the DL Basement Systems downtown studio. If you missed Hour 1, a lot of Flames talk, some serious analysis. We also tried to make Mango the nickname for Andre Kuzmenko. So we covered a lot of ground there. We got a lot coming up in Hour 2. Really excited now for our next guest. She covers every sport ever for Sportsnet. You know her as at Goldie on Sports on social media. Haley McGoldrick joins us now. Haley, how are you today?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you very much. We are taking a trying to at least salvage what is left of brackets and whatnot after the first couple of days of March Madness, or first few days of March Madness now. Here, a few days into the madness, I guess your overall thoughts, men's or women's side, how has the basketball been so far?
I think it's been phenomenal. That's what makes March so magic, right? All the upsets, all of the super close games you saw on the women's side, teams like LSU and Stanford, who have already seen some struggles early. Obviously, on the men's side, you're seeing programs like Kentucky that have fallen early. I think that's what just makes this tournament so fun. That's why people who have no idea what's been going on the entire college basketball season are tuning in right now, because it's just been a lot of great basketball, a lot of close games, and obviously now going into the Sweet 16 games, we're going to see some even closer matches, some even better basketball. So I think it's been phenomenal.
Looking at the women's bracket first here, one of the bigger upsets in either bracket over the weekend, as Ohio State falls to Duke. I guess Duke as a 7 seed now into the Sweet 16. How for real are they as a threat? Obviously, they've beat a 2 seed, so at least a little for real. But how seriously should we be taking their chances going forward?
I think they're a great team. Kara Lawson's a phenomenal coach. She's in her fourth year with the team. Reagan Richardson is incredible. She scored 28 points against Ohio State. And I think that the Blue Devils are a really good team. But I do think watching that game, and I'm not just saying this because Ohio State runs through my blood and this is devastating to watch them lose, but truly I think Ohio State lost that game for themselves. They were up at 16 points at one point in that game, and they just fell apart in the second half and especially in the fourth quarter. And they lost 3 of the last 4 games coming to this tournament. They really were just didn't have the momentum on their side. And players like Cody McMahon and J.C. Sheldon, Celeste Taylor, they played well, but they just didn't hold on to it well enough. And while I think that this Duke team is really great and they put up a fight and they forced Ohio State to have those sort of meltdowns in the second half and especially that fourth quarter, it also was Ohio State just not being able to hang on. And when you're leading by 16 points, you need to be able to hang on to that, especially in March Madness, especially when you are a number 2 seed. And so I think that Duke is going to put up a good fight in the next round. But I think that game was more kind of a disappointment from Ohio State's side, but you still have to give players like Reagan Richardson their credit, because 28 points in the March Madness game is no easy feat.
Looking at LSU, there was a bit of a scare there against Middle Tennessee. I think Middle Tennessee was up at half. Social media is buzzing, like, Angel Reese. There's so many storylines that if LSU is out, like, what does this mean? And then they went LOL and just absolutely ran through them. But how do you think LSU kind of responded to that early pressure there over the weekend?
I mean, they put on a defensive masterclass in that second half, and I think that was the biggest thing. They held Middle Tennessee to 7 points in the fourth quarter, which was absolutely huge. And we have to give Middle Tennessee credit as well. They were coming into this game on a 20-game winning streak. As much as they're an 11th seed because of the fact they don't play in a Power 5 conference, they're a really good team. They had a 30-5 record this year, but LSU's defense was just on another level. Angel Reese with a double-double. Sajay Johnson had 21 points. They just completely dominated the second half. But I think sometimes in these games, especially these first and second rounds, for both the women's and men's sides, you're seeing, oh, we're a number 3 seed and we're playing a number 11 seed. This is going to be a cakewalk. And it's not. I think seeds can be a little, I don't even know how to say it, like a little bit, like you're looking at an 11 seed, okay, we're going to dominate this game. But no, they're only an 11 seed because of the fact that if you play in the SEC, the Pac-12, the Big Ten, you're going to be ranked a little bit higher. It's very rare that you're seeing a lot of these non-Power 5 conferences ranked super, super high in these seedings. So I think that Middle Tennessee deserves their credit, but LSU showed why they're the defending national champions in that second half. It was just their defense was phenomenal. They held Middle Tennessee to 20 points, sorry, in the second half. And so they just played the way that they know how to play basketball, but I think they didn't take things as seriously as they should have in the first half.
If you Google Angel Reese, it is not surprisingly, oh, wow, great defensive effort in the second half. It's Angel Reese called out for behavior during LSU tournament game. Angel Reese taunts Middle Tennessee opponent to tears. Are people overreacting to Angel Reese against Middle Tennessee? Is all the headlines like this warranted? What do you? It sucks that we have to talk about the behavior of a player, but is there an overreaction going on here?
I think so, and I think due to the whole "you can't see me, Caitlin Clark" that happened last year during the national championship, Angel Reese has now had a target on her back that she doesn't really deserve, and so people are criticizing and scrutinizing her every single move. And she was, you know, away from the team for a little bit, and people were looking into that. She's even said herself, you know, I am constantly getting good grades, playing good basketball, doing all of this, and nothing's ever good enough. And I think she's a player who, yeah, you get into it. You've seen players across not just basketball, sports in general, who people, when they get emotional about the game, whether it's a good emotion, bad emotion, whatever, they're a little bit more vibrant when it comes to it. They do things like that. But I think just Angel Reese has been in the spotlight before due to these kinds of things. And so as soon as something happens, it's absolutely blown up that Angel Reese did this, when she's just a player who, that's how she expresses herself when she's feeling something during a game.
Yeah, I personally have no problem with that kind of stuff, but I understand that my what I'm willing to tolerate when it comes to those sorts of things is a lot greater than some others. I think people get a bit too worked up about athletes in some of the most emotional moments of their lives and how maybe they respond to that. On the women's side, it has, I guess both sides, really. It has really been the top seeds, aside from, sorry, Ohio State, taking care of business so far. So a lot of teams holding serve. What has kind of, just bigger picture on the women's side, what has stood out to you so far from this tournament?
I think the biggest thing is that, number one, seeing a team like Stanford kind of struggle was a huge one, and that's all credit to Audie Crooks, freshman scoring 40 points, absolutely unreal for her. But I think that for the most part, those teams like a South Carolina, like an Iowa, who have had such phenomenal seasons, we're not really going to see them struggle until, I think, the Sweet 16, maybe the Elite Eight at this point. But I think there's just so much talent in women's basketball right now, and that's the biggest thing too, because you look at Stanford, okay, even Cameron Brink fouled out. She only had, I think, 6 points in the overtime win against Iowa State. Well, Kiki Irifan came out. She scored 41 points, 16 rebounds. She kind of filled that gap to Stanford when they needed it most. I think there's just so much talent. You look at a Notre Dame team who is playing Ole Miss right now, and you look at a freshman like Hannah Hidalgo, and she's phenomenal as well. She's constantly putting up, I mean, averaging 23 points per game this season as a freshman like Juju Watkins, who's averaging 26 points per game. That there's just so much talent all around. And I think it used to be before, you're seeing a lot of seniors, and there still is a lot of spotlight on the seniors, like a Caitlin Clark, like a Cameron Brink, like a Artia Jackson, just because they are WNBA draft eligible and all that. But there's so much talent top to bottom on these teams. And I think that's the biggest thing when it comes to these games. You're looking at, you know, games like Tennessee, North Carolina State, which is going to be happening this afternoon, which is a huge game, is going to be so tough. UConn-Syracuse is another one that's going to be such a great game. And I just think that's what I've noticed so far, is as much as, yeah, the top seeds have dominated, there's talented basketball all around, and it's not going to be kind of those years back in the day when you just knew that UConn was going to win it all because UConn was a dynasty and Breanna Stewart was there, and that was that. Now it's kind of anyone's game.
Looking at it from my standpoint, it feels like South Carolina kind of gets slept on a little bit. Like, obviously, like you said, UConn, they have Paige. They've lost like twice in the last 150 years. Caitlin Clark is a star unto herself. Angel Reese is making people cry on LSU. And South Carolina is just kind of going out there and being awesome. Like, you are obviously much more tuned into this than I am. Does it kind of feel like they kind of get passed over a bit too easily?
Oh, 100%. And I think the biggest thing, too, it's two reasons, in my opinion. One is that they lost last year in the Final Four, and people were expecting them to go win the whole thing. So people were saying, well, I'm not putting my money on South Carolina again because they lost last year in the Final Four, despite the fact that they were the 2022 champions. And then also, I think not in a bad sense, but a lot of this season, the narrative really has been Caitlin Clark, and a lot of people aren't paying attention to the other incredible things that are happening in women's basketball, like the fact that South Carolina had another undefeated season, like the fact that South Carolina has won both of their games by at least 47 points, if not more, in the first two rounds, which is absolutely unreal. And I think, too, a lot of people were paying attention last year because, okay, Aaliyah Boston, but they're not looking now at players like a Raven Johnson, like a Camila Cardoso. Camila Cardoso is going to be a top 10 draft pick in the WNBA draft this season. And I think, I agree. I definitely think that South Carolina, for a team that has had such success, they are slept on a little bit because of the fact that you look at an Iowa and they think, oh, okay, it's Caitlin Clark's Cinderella, not a Cinderella story, but storybook, I should say, storybook story, that if she would win the title and go off and ride into the sunset of the WNBA as number one overall pick, whatever. Or same for Cameron Brink, you know, the Pac-12 is dissolving, so this is the last year of the Pac-12, and Cameron Brink going out with another Stanford title after they won in 2021. But for South Carolina, for a team that's so incredible, I agree. I feel like I'm not hearing enough about them. And I think that's a somewhat good thing, only for the fact that people are paying attention to so many other teams in women's basketball, and you're hearing a lot of these younger names and other players, and players who don't play for the South Carolinas and the Iowas and the Stanfords, who are getting a lot more credit. But also, yeah, for a team that has completely dominated this season and is dominating so far in the tournament, I feel like I'm not hearing enough hype about them.
On the men's side, Purdue might be kind of in that same boat where they were a one seed, but I don't know if people were taking them as seriously as maybe some other one seeds. And obviously, like, UConn deserves all the credit and all of that. But all Purdue has gone out there with their giant Canadian and just steamrolled in the first couple of games so far. Well, what have you made of that particular number one seed so far this tournament?
Yeah, I think, like you said, people just look at Purdue and they just think, oh, Zach Edey's tall and they're just going to pass him the ball and he's going to get baskets. It doesn't actually make them a good team. When it's like, okay, they have won both of their games by 28 and 39 points, so not even remotely close. Obviously, Zach's putting up 23 points and 14 rebounds against Utah State is huge, and then he tallied a 3-point, 20-rebound March Madness game, like the first since 1995 or something, which is actually absolutely huge again. But I think the biggest thing is that it's like, basketball is not a single-player sport. That's the thing. You've seen it on both the men's side and the women's side. For example, like with a player like Caitlin Clark, who's a generational player, Iowa doesn't win every single game because if teams shut her down, they need to have other answers. And Iowa does have other answers, and Purdue's the same. Purdue also has other answers other than him. And so I agree. I think people aren't taking them super seriously just because of the fact that they think that you're just going to pass the big man the ball and he's going to score on that side and that's how you win games. But basketball is so much more than that. And Purdue's definitely a team who deserves more respect because winning both of your first two rounds by basically 30 and 40 points per game is huge. You're not sweating that at this point. And again, it's going to get a lot more competitive when you get to the Sweet 16 and whatnot. But that's a team that deserves a little bit more respect as well. I agree.
NC State is through as an 11 seed. Do we have a Cinderella on our hands, or are they, I guess to continue the metaphor, turning into a pumpkin against Marquette this weekend?
I want to say yes and no, because their story is really cool. The fact that they needed to win five games in 5 days to make the ACC tournament, and they did. And obviously coming in and winning. Their win against Oakland is whatever, because Oakland's win against Kentucky, I think, tells more of the story than NC State's win over Oakland does. But I think that NC State is a team that definitely deserves to be where they are. They have a lot of talent. But also, like you said, I think Marquette has the ability to be able to not humble them a little bit, because I feel like when you're a low seed, you're not expecting much. Having those Cinderella stories is so cool and fun, but they're not expecting to go out there and be Marquette. It would be great if they did, but I think that if this is the end of it, they should still be very proud of themselves to make it how they did. It was something where they didn't even know if they were going to make the ACC tournament, let alone March Madness. But if it ends here, I think it's still really cool, and it is a fun. That's, again, like I was saying, one of the stories that makes March so fun is watching teams like this. Even if you only make it to the Sweet 16, you still made it, and you weren't even supposed to be here.
Yeah, no, it's those stories every year that are so much fun. And it you kind of mentioned it before, like it does seem like we're getting a little bit more of the Oakland just beat Kentucky and all of that, instead of once every couple of years, it's George Mason and we all lose our minds and stuff like that. This sort of thing feels like it's happening a little bit more often now. Do you think there's a reason for it, or is it just it feels like it's happening more often because there's more attention to all these things?
I think it's the talent for sure. I think we're seeing a little bit less of just, you know, every good player goes to Kentucky and Duke anymore. These amazing players are seeking out other options, and you're not just playing these, like, you think of back in the day when, I want to say like 2014, 2015, like those kind of days, the run that Kentucky had, but it was just like they were pumping out NBA talent like no tomorrow. And now that landscape's changed a little bit. And I think, again, top to bottom, that you're seeing a lot more talent across rosters as basketball's growing, as the sport is growing, you're seeing a lot more talent. So, like, I remember, again, it always comes back to Ohio State. When Ohio State got upset by Oral Roberts, they were a number 2 seed. Oral Roberts was a number 15 seed. Same thing. Like, it was kind of crazy, but you look, and that team had a half-decent run as well. It's not just, like, you're winning one game and then you're out in the round of 32. Of course, that happens sometimes as well, but you're actually seeing these teams make a half-decent run. They are making the Sweet 16. Sometimes they're making the Elite Eight. They're just talented teams, and I think that's one of the, not problems with college sports, because I, for one, love college sports, but I think just when you have these teams that are in not Power 5 conferences, when you're playing in the Sun Belt, when you're playing in the Mid-America Conference, when you're playing in these Group of 5 conferences or whatever it is, they're just not taken as seriously. They're not seeded as high, but they've still got so much talent on their roster. But if you just don't play in the Big Ten, you don't play in the SEC, you're not going to be seeded as high, but you have phenomenal players. You see a lot of these guys, like from Oakland, Jack Golke, like his 3-point scoring, phenomenal, insane. The fact that he, I don't remember the year that he set the record from, but he had 10 successful 3-pointers, the first time since 1990, became the 5th player in the NCAA tournament to make 10 3-pointers in one game. Insane stuff. But you just don't hear a lot of these stories during the regular season because people tend not to care outside of the Power 5 conferences, so it kind of gets lost in the background unless you're like a true college basketball sicko and you're watching like the Mid-American Conference and the Mountain West, and that's not me, but if that's you, I'm not judging. But I think that's why we're seeing more and more of them, because there is so much talent, but they're just not at the forefront of the media. They're not on our TVs because they don't play for these big-name schools.
And one of the big-name schools that has become a victim has been Kentucky. John Calipari, probably the biggest name in coaching in basketball now, with Coach K gone. You think of him as like, oh, yeah, this guy's there every year. Hasn't won a championship since 2012, which, yeah, there's like 1,000 schools. Like, not everyone's going to win a championship every year. They haven't been in the Final Four, though, since 2015, and have won just one game in the tournament going back to 2019. Is a little bit of the bloom coming off of the rose with Calipari, and what just hasn't worked with this team?
Oh, I absolutely think that it's, like I said, it's crazy to think that at one point they were kind of the place to be. You think of so many NBA talents who came from that school. Like, for me, one of my favorite players is Devin Booker. Like, he went to Kentucky. You see that. And I think it's just because players are choosing other schools, and they're not even just choosing a Duke or a Gonzaga or a Villanova anymore, whatever team, a UConn. Like, I think just you're seeing that too. And like you said, okay, they haven't made the Final Four since 2015. When you're committing to a school, you're going to look at that and you're going to say, okay, well, what's happening with their development, what's happening with their recruiting? Also, for a lot of these guys, due to the fact that the NBA does have, you know, the one and done rule, you're looking for the best shot for yourself to make a starting five and play a lot of minutes and raise your draft stock and go play in the NBA. And I think that's the biggest thing for a long time. They didn't want to go to Kentucky because they knew they weren't going to start. They weren't going to get their opportunities. And because you don't have that sort of development and you're not really retaining those players and you're not getting them NBA ready due to the fact that a lot of the time, for a really long time, Kentucky did just have all the top recruits in the nation who were essentially NBA ready. They're just playing for 1 year and then going to go to the NBA. I think that's the biggest thing, is that they just don't have that sort of development, and that's something they have to work on. And I don't want to say that, you know, Coach Calipari's past his expiration date, but you see somebody like Coach K, you know when it's time to hang it up, and that's, it is what it is. John Calipari's in his 15th season. It's not like he hasn't seen success in Kentucky. But I just think that's the biggest thing, is that you see teams like, you know, in college football, for example, like in Alabama, they kind of hit their stride, and then all of a sudden, same thing. The last four times they've been in the national title game, they've only won it once. And then you see Nick Saban go, okay, well, I see the end now. I see that this Alabama isn't the place to be anymore. And I just kind of think that Kentucky basketball's hit that point a little bit as well.
We're up against it, but I do want to get one F1 in there. Rough weekend for appendixes with Sines winning like a week and a day after losing his. Amazing story, all of it. It would have been nice if we had a competitive race when Max's car exploded. But aside from that, what did you think of the race, and where do you think Sines ends up next year?
I loved the race, and I'm not just saying that due to the fact that Max was out, but I think that it was finally exciting due to the fact that he wasn't 12 seconds ahead by lap five. It was phenomenal. I think it showed that Ferrari has a fighting chance, more in the constructors than the drivers due to the fact that Max was already so far ahead, but at least in the constructors, it shows that Ferrari's got a decent car. They've got some good direction now. Their strategy is pretty good. Also loved the race from McLaren. I think McLaren, obviously both Lando and Oscar are young, talented drivers, but also they've got a half decent car in the race as well. I want to say I would love to see Carlos Sainz in a Mercedes, but if that's the car, I don't want to see anybody in a Mercedes. That, like, horrible. The car is horrible. Everything that happened to both Lewis and poor George, I don't know why that last lap of a race is George Russell's biggest enemy, but I just think that I would love to see Sainz in a Mercedes if it was kind of a good car, but as of right now, I don't really know where we're going to see him. I would love to maybe see him in a Red Bull as well. I don't really know what's happening with Checo's seat as well. If he loses that seat, I think it would be cool. You know, Sainz has history with Toro Rosso. He's been part of the Red Bull family. It'd be nice to see him in that car as well. But I think this crew, I saw a tweet that said this is the only driver to win a race for Ferrari in the last two seasons, and he doesn't have a seat with you next year, kind of thing. Obviously, seeing Lewis in a Ferrari will be super cool, but I would like to see Sainz maybe in a Red Bull if Checo's seat is gone, if they're going to get rid of him. But I would also kind of like to see him in a Mercedes if they fix that car. But as of right now, I don't want to see anybody in that Mercedes because it is just a tractor.
Haley, this was a blast. Thank you so much for doing this, and we'll chat again soon.
Thanks so much for having me. Take care.
Yeah, you too. There is Haley McGoldrick, covers like basically literally every sport over at Sportsnet. Find her on social media at Goldie on Sports. Again, we are right up against it. When we come back, a few interesting stories from around the NHL. We'll put a bow on the show going around the league and just the sports world in general, because there's a big scandal we'll find out a little bit more on today as well. That when we continue on Sportsnet Today here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. One segment to go here on Sportsnet Today. My name is Peter Klein, in for Logan Gordon. Fun day here on the network today. As always, we are coming to you from the DL Basement Systems downtown studio for Doug Lacey's Basement Systems Wet Basement. We have a lasting solution to keep your basement dry. If you experience any water in your basement, contact Basement Systems. They are all things basement. You visit dlbasementsystems.com. Had a couple of guests today on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Check those out in podcast form as soon as Cam gets them up there. The Haley one will be up after. We're still going an hour or two, so he'll get that up in a little bit. We chatted with Haley about March Madness on the men's and women's side. We will keep that conversation going here now. Shan is here, and Shan, I understand. Like, I'm just going to let you go. I don't totally know what's about to happen, but I'll just let you do it.
It's about to be 25 minutes of 25? Nonstop. Okay. I'm just kidding. Well, yeah, it's a tough day because we're not going to have March Madness until Thursday, but right. Yesterday, you know, it was the round of 32. We had eight games yesterday. It was, we saw a lot of upsets in the first round.
Yeah.
So let's start with the first game of the day, Marquette versus Colorado. Colorado, the 10 seed, that had that ridiculous game against Florida in the first round, whatever. Marquette, 2 seed. They looked pretty good. It was a really close game coming down the stretch. Colorado had a point where they looked like it was over. They were down 10, 12, and came back in the end. But Tyler Cole, like, he was really solid. Clutch at the end, too, had a big shot to essentially ice the game. 21 points for him. Marquette moves on, so brackets not busted. Next game of the day, Duke versus James Madison University. James Madison, the 12th seed. They busted quite a few brackets. in the first round. But nope, not against Duke. Duke was, they looked flawless. They are a 4 seed, but Jared McCain, 30 points. And he was shooting the lights out. Yeah. 8 for 11 from three is ridiculous. He started 5 from 5 from three. And Tyrese Proctor, 18 points. Jeremy Roach, 15. Kyle Filipowski, 14. Like that was a solid game for Duke, and one that I think, you know, people overlooked them because they're Duke and they used to be so good. But now, you know, as a 4 seed, they got overlooked. This was the game of the day that busted quite a few brackets. Baylor, the 3 seed, they lost to Clemson. Clemson, 72-64. That was a tight one coming down the stretch. I think Baylor had quite a few chances to close it out, but at the end of the day, Clemson, they busted quite a few brackets. Baylor fell. That was a big one. Alabama versus GCU. Alabama, another 4 seed. People don't really know what to expect. They were really good. Marcus Sears, 26 points. It was just hard to stop Alabama. They looked like a team that was solid. Now, this is the team, UConn. Everyone knows they're the favorite. They have a ridiculous team, well-coached. UConn 75-58 over Northwestern Wildcats. It really wasn't close.
Like, no.
It was a little closer than the first round for sure. Let's move on to the biggest game of the day. This one was ridiculous. Okay. If you had the pleasure of watching this, it was awesome. And I say that because I'm the idiot who turned it off.
Oh no.
They were down. It was Houston versus Texas A&M. Houston, the 1 seed. There are quite a few people's championship favorites. It was a 13-point game. Houston was up. Flames game was on at the same time. I was like, I'm done. I'm putting this on the big screen. Like, Flames pushing for the playoff spot. I couldn't miss it. So I turned it off. And then I'm in a group chat, and I see they text. They say, oh, my goodness, look at this game. Like, what do you mean? They hit a 3 at the buzzer to tie the game. It was ridiculous. It was an inbounds, a baseline inbounds. Bounced it twice to the top of the 3 somehow. I don't think I've ever seen that. Texas A&M fell 195 in overtime after a 13-point comeback. That was a wild one if you had the luxury of seeing it, which I didn't.
That's not necessarily Miami fans leaving before the Ray Allen shot,
no.
But that's still, you know what? Be better.
Yeah, and Houston was hitting threes at the end of the game, and that's what it was. They hit a 3. I was like, all right, it's over. See ya.
Yeah.
I'm the idiot who forgot that it's March and anything can happen in March. San Diego State versus Yale. That one not close at all. San Diego State pretty much whooped them 85-57. And the game that, you know, we talked about it briefly with Haley, Purdue. Purdue is maybe the most overlooked number 1 seed I've ever seen in my life because people love to hate on Zach Edey. Why? Yeah. Because he's 7'4". I don't know if people are jealous of him being 7'4". I don't know what it is. He's a great basketball player. He's actually quite mobile for his size. I'm not saying he should be a bona fide first-round pick in the NBA. I'm not saying that. I don't even know if he can be a bench player in the NBA, or if he can be a rotation player, sorry. But I saw the comparison that he could be the Boban Marjanovic. That's not bad. And also, he will be in the NBA,
yeah,
which is the best professional basketball league in the world. Anyways, yeah, Purdue whooped. They played Utah State. 106-67, not even close. Zach Edey, 23 points, 14 rebounds. I mean, the guy's a beast. That team is solid. They're not a 1 seed because they have a super tall dude, and I do not understand the hate about Zach Edey. That's just late from yesterday, so I wish all of your brackets the best. I'm sure they're not doing well because mine's not.
Yeah, no, that's definitely the best barometer as well. How is mine doing? Well, no one's could be doing well then. Just one last time. Can we just get the sound effect? Thank you. Okay, so just wanted to touch on a couple of things here before we bounce. By the way, my bracket is also in complete shambles and just an absolute disgrace, but I saw a story today that kind of caught my attention. Rob Rossi, real good writer for The Athletic, but this one was a bit of a, Sidney Crosby doesn't need strangers telling him what to do. That is true. He's a forever penguin, probably true, and helping shape Pittsburgh's next great hockey team suits Crosby more than chasing a Stanley Cup elsewhere. Well, and look, if that is what Crosby wants to do, if he's like, you know what, that winning thing, done it, don't care. I want to make sure I leave this organization in a great spot, then by all means, go for it. I hope he doesn't feel like he owes the organization anything because he saved them for one and has given them like 20 amazing years as a hockey player. This whole thing, like I understand it's a weird spot right now in Pittsburgh because Sidney Crosby at times this year was playing at like a Hart Trophy level, and now they're not going to make the playoffs. And next year, it doesn't look overly optimistic, right? Like they have a bit of a ways to go. And so you're at this weird spot. Like, do you trade franchise icon Sidney Crosby? Do you keep him here and waste the final years of his his career and hope for some kind of Steph Curry with Golden State one last resurgence to go win a championship. It's a weird spot. And look, like Crosby, if he is saying, I haven't read the article, apologies. I just saw the headline. Actually, I just saw the tweet. But if Crosby is saying like, no, I want to be here and help grow the thing. A, good for him. B, what else is he supposed to say? Like, that there is no world, him especially, is he going to go out there and be like, oh yeah, if this thing doesn't turn around soon, deuces. Like, I think the NHL would be better if he was maybe in a different spot. If he was competing, whether that's Pittsburgh, Colorado, Columbus, Toronto, Montreal, wherever. We just need Sidney Crosby to be playing relevant hockey in the final years of his career. And so, if that's not going to be in Pittsburgh, like, it would be cool if he retired with one team. I don't really care. Jerome McGinley's banner wouldn't be any bigger or shinier at the Dome if he retired a Flame after never having played with anyone else. Like, that stuff, it's neat if it happens, but also, I just want to see this guy in playing relevant hockey.
The Penguins, plain and simple, do whatever Sidney Crosby wants. Because if Crosby does say, I want out, I know it'll help the franchise, I'm not going to win here because we don't really have a great future in the next, well, at least the next 3 years.
Yeah.
You do that, and you do that trade happily. You say, thank you for everything you did in Pittsburgh. Like you said, franchise icon, I mean, NHL icon too. Sidney Crosby is one of the best players we've ever seen and will ever see, period. If he decides that I want to stay and I want to help build something here, I want to help continue this culture, sure. But you do not do anything without the 100% approval of Sid. There's no way. With that being said, he is playing at a ridiculous level, not just for his age, but period.
Yeah.
And the fit, like, you talk about him being on a different team. The one fit that makes sense is Colorado. And it's simply because you have Nathan MacKinnon. And, you know, they come from the same spot, but it makes so much sense too. Right now you have Casey Mittelstadt running the 2C, and this is nothing against Casey Mittelstadt. He is a really good player. And they traded him for Bowen Byram for a reason.
Yeah.
But imagine a 1-2 punch for a couple years of Nathan MacKinnon at the 1C and Sidney Crosby at the 2C, and then you put them together on the power play.
Oh, that'd be insane.
Exactly. It makes so much sense. And I'm very curious to see how this plays out, because we've seen 2 years of angry Sidney Crosby.
Yeah.
Which I love to see. But angry Sidney Crosby wants to win a cup still.
Yeah.
So that's why
this has to be killing him, right? Like, he's saying all the right things and all of that. And I'm guessing at someone who I've never really met before.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, this has to be killing him, what's happening there.
It looks like it is. And that's why I was confident Pittsburgh was going to make it, because he was so angry last year after they missed. And, he played really well. It's not on him at all. So I can't see Sidney Crosby saying, yeah, like, Pittsburgh was awesome, I'm staying here because I want, to keep this legacy. Your legacy isn't going anywhere.
No, and you're getting a statue that. There, like, the second you're retired.
100%. So I would like to see Sidney Crosby go to a different place, preferably Colorado.
It's going to be wild when he ends up with Vegas next year. I don't know how they're going to pull it off, but...
Exactly.
Like, Pittsburgh, he is an expiring contract next season, right? Like, he has 1 year after next year. And the Penguins do have two retained spots that they could use. And Crosby at, I guess it would be 4.35. That's insane that you could get that. Like, if Sidney Crosby wants to be part of shaping the future of the Avalanche, trading Sidney Crosby at less than 4.5 will go a long way to shaping the future of the Pittsburgh Penguins here. So I think we need to see this guy playing competitive hockey games. And Kyle Dubas, it's a tough spot, because obviously he went in there and the marching orders were, make this team the best you can. And I think that they swing and miss on Erik Karlsson a little bit. But that was the biggest move that was out there, and that they try to make it to try to be as competitive as possible. But no, I think it's better for the sport and everything if this guy is playing competitive hockey. And if they can get Pittsburgh figured out next year, awesome. Stick him there. That's fine. But I just thought, I'm with you. Like, Colorado would be cool. I don't like Montreal's not going to be a cup contender, but it would be cool to see him play there for a time, right? Like, I don't think less of Jerome McGinley's career because he did the cup chasing thing at the end. It doesn't bother me even for a moment, he is still the greatest Flame of all time and all of those things. So I don't think it affects his legacy one bit if he ends up going somewhere else.
Now, what does a trade look like for Sidney Crosby? I know I'm throwing you one here, but that's...
Zari, no.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a couple of first round picks, it would be massive, right? Like the Flames got five pieces for Lindholm. And again, all due respect to Lindholm and Crosby. Like we haven't seen a trade like that ever. And the team that would be taking him on would be taking on a bit of risk. Like at some point, the human body breaks down, right? The whole father time undefeated thing. Guy's 36 years old. Like how long is he playing at this level? But again, you could potentially get him at 4.35, which, oh my God. So it would have to be multiple first round picks, a couple of prospects that you've heard of, and some young players on your team that it pains you to give up. Like that would be that's just the conversation that we're having. Text coming in. Crosby isn't going anywhere. He isn't going to ask for a trade, and Dubas doesn't have the balls to trade him. He's not going to ask for a trade. I don't think we ever hear that Crosby asks for a trade, because I think it would be like Crosby and his group just aren't about that life. And I think it would be wildly disrespectful for the Penguins to leak that sort of information out. So I would be surprised if we hear about a Crosby trade request. But I do wonder if they go like, hey, it's time. You know, like I don't think he's going to go in there. This is unacceptable. I won't play here another day. I don't think it's going to be that. I think it's just going to be like a, hey, could you? Because we don't and you don't and eh. Like it's just I think that's probably how it would all go down.
I would feel for Kyle Dubas if he had to have that conversation. Like Sidney Crosby is, if I was a general manager, which it's a very good thing I'm not.
Yeah.
If I had to go to Sidney Crosby and be like, hey, it might be time to go, that I would be shaking. Like,
yeah.
I would be shaking, sweating. It would be terrifying because that guy is the ultimate competitor. It's not like you're just trading. You're not just trading a talent. You're trading like I said, the ultimate competitor. So I would completely understand if he stayed in Pittsburgh, if that's what he wanted. Sure. It's just with that competitiveness and you know, you talk about it, him expiring next year.
Yeah.
It does make a little bit of sense to use that retention spot and see what happens. Like maybe he signs for the last year of his career back in Pittsburgh and goes for a couple of years. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, but I am very intrigued and I think it's going to be the main talking point next year.
Matt and Cochran texting in, nah, Sid just doesn't sign the extension and goes to free agency. I don't see that happening.
No,
I think if they're like, they go to him with an extension, like, hey, do you want to sign it? He'll be like, no. And then at that point, like you can't, the only thing that can't happen here is he leaves for free, right? Like if you want to keep him there till he's 45, go for it. Or if you want to trade him, fine. He leaves for nothing. Then like, that's the part of shaping the Penguins' future that just is crushing to them. And at that point, like whether you're moving him or whatever, it's for sale sign and everything, right? Like you see what you can get from Malkin, Letang, Carlson, like all of it. It is just like anything not stapled to the floor. And you try to find the next one and hope that the ping pong balls go your way. Another thing that happened over the last little bit, Zach Hyman gets his 50th goal of the season. First of all, like amazing signing by the Oilers when they signed him. And what a career he has had, going from Matthews to McDavid. Like, that's not a bad way. He definitely went to the Chris Kunitz school of figuring out your National Hockey League career. Because that is some excellent work for Zach Hyman. But it kind of spawned a discussion on social media, the place for all great discussions to go, where someone said, no, I think it was LeBron. I'm not exactly sure. But someone said, Zach Hyman might be the best free agent signing of the last decade. And on one hand, I understand where you're talking about, because like you are getting 50 goals and Hyman isn't making a ton, right? Like it's not league minimum by any stretch of the imagination, but just quickly pulling it up as quick as I can. Hyman is at $5.5 million. Getting 50 goals for $5.5 million is work of art, beautiful, 100%, maybe the best value that you're going to get. That being said, Artemi Panarin could win the Hart this year, and that was a free agent signing. But it led to the discussion like, well, Hyman's contract is the better value, so obviously that's the better one. And that's where I think we kind of lose the discussion on value over, like, greatness. Because there is no question Zach Hyman has been incredibly valuable for the Oilers and has been an amazing signing and bang for your buck, tremendous. That being said, if I'm starting a hockey team tomorrow, I'm taking Artemi Panarin 100 times out of 10. And the great value contract of a Zach Hyman allows you to then go out and get the superstar player that an Artemi Panarin is. And so I think sometimes, especially in a cap world, we can get caught up in, oh, what's the value? Value, value. Well, it's got to be cap it, AAV, blah, 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 blah. Sometimes, and I will never forgive the Leafs for, I think, screwing this up because they just have all these super talented guys under big cap hits and they lose all the time. So it's like, well, you can't have these great players on big contracts. I'd rather have a Hyman. And it's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Having awesome players is awesome. Make that the social media post for that. Yeah. Having awesome players is great. And when you have guys making $5.5 million and they score 50, that's really great as well. But those value contracts allow you to get the players who go out and make like the biggest differences at those times. And so I do think in cap worlds, it happens in basketball all the time. It happens in the NHL, I think, way too much. Sometimes just having awesome players is the way to go. And if you get one of those in free agency, that's sweet.
Well, it's an interesting discussion. And you look at Artemi Panarin with him and the way that the Rangers are, I'm going to say stacked offensively because they are, they have two first lines. And that's why the Rangers, they've had a rotation of defensemen, especially in their bottom pair, and they're like from 3 to 6, and sometimes it's been a disaster. And they've started to figure out a little bit, but it doesn't matter because they have so much talent up front. And adding Artemi Panarin to Mika Zibanejad, Chris Kreider, and then you know they lost Buchnevich, and that was a huge loss for them. But you bring in Panarin, and all of a sudden it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting signing. And Zach Hyman in Edmonton, it was one of the best signings, period. And, you know, it hurts to see from the team down south from Edmonton. It hurts a little bit to see that was such a good signing. But one thing I'm done with is people saying that he's a Connor McDavid merchant. No.
No, he's not that.
He gets a bunch of tap-in goals and whatever from the front of the net. What is, like, the first thing that they tell you when you're growing up playing hockey? Isn't it to get to the front of the net and score goals there? Like, that's how you get... I don't care. 50 goals is 50 goals. I don't care where they come from. If they come from the center ice, I don't care where they come from. So Zach Hyman, you know, I can't hear people, you know, diminishing that. But I would have to agree with you. Like, Artemi Panarin, that signing for New York was massive for them, and I don't think they're anywhere near... Because you can't grab players like that out of nowhere.
No.
You can't just find players like that. Zach Hyman's one of those players that you can kind of find because he was buried a little bit in Toronto. He was.
Yeah.
So yeah, I agree with you, but nonetheless, that guy is
this is not what I expected. This is not an anti-Hyman take. Totally. It's not even an anti-Edmonton take. I have some, but it's not that. But no, like Panarin, I think the reason you can have two first lines is Panarin unlocked something in Zibanejad, and now he has flourished into this guy as well. That's what, like, Hyman is great, and he's not a McDavid merchant or anything like that, but Panarin creates Hymans, you know? Like, he creates those sorts of players.
And I got to add to that. Look at what Lafreniere's been able to do.
Totally.
People have been calling him a bust. First of all, I'm not talking about anybody coming from that COVID draft class being a bust, at least yet. You missed a whole year of development.
Yeah.
I'm so done with that. Anyways, Lafreniere is playing with Panarin now, and he's scoring goals because Panarin's one of the better playmakers in the world, period.
Yeah.
And I don't think he gets enough credit for that, honestly.
No, he makes everyone around him better.
For sure.
Just quickly before we go, Cam, can we get you on the mic here for a quick second?
Yes, sir.
All right. I do quickly want to talk F1 because I watched the race over the weekend.
I've been waiting for this.
We talked about it a little bit before the show started. Verstappen's car goes down. I think it was like lap 5, which, by the way, I am for trying to make him drive with one brake on the whole time to try to even the odds here a little bit. I think that's some real great strategy there by the FIA. But he goes down. It's like, all right, we're going to have a competitive race.
Mm-hmm.
And signs laughs in all of our faces as he goes basically coast to coast to pick up the win. He doesn't have a seat for next year. There is so many interesting storylines. Like, there's going to be 3 Drive to Survive episodes just off this race weekend for what happened with Williams and the Sergeant Albon thing. Russell decides that he only needs 2 wheels on his car on the last lap and goes sideways.
That was rough.
The signs thing where he is being replaced by a dude who didn't even finish this race. Like, just so many amazing storylines from this weekend. What stood out to you from Formula One out in Australia?
I mean, I think it's just how competitive Ferrari can actually be. when Max Verstappen doesn't exist right. in the race. I mean, to see those guys get the 1-2, and I forget exactly where Perez finished, but it was in
sixth. Yeah.
You can see that these guys have a car and they're ready to go. And what makes me really excited is when Lewis Hamilton takes Carlos Sainz's seat next year, what is he going to be able to get out of that car?
Yeah.
And what does that mean for Carlos Sainz? You know, we talked to Hayley McGoldrick very briefly about this. I would love to see him in the Mercedes car. I think they can actually get their you know what together by next year. But I mean, just to see how far Ferrari has come in, just in terms of overall reliability of their car, the performance they can get out of it, I'm really excited to see. They're right behind Red Bull right now in the Constructors. I'm really excited to see if they can push for that title this year.
Yeah, no, I think the Constructors might actually be something there. Verstappen, he is undeniable, and so I don't want to over...
He is Thanos. He is undeniable.
Oh, yeah, no. And, like, he won the Constructors by himself last year, and the odds are that's going to happen again this year. My official prediction for how it's going to go down, I do think the Alonso to Mercedes rumors are true.
Ooh.
I think he goes there, and I think Sainz takes Alonso's spot at Aston Martin or whatever we're going to call it again. That is my official prediction for how that's all going to go down.
That is spicy.
See? Hey. Look, you all know there's one place to go for your hot F1 takes. It is Sportsnet today. all right, that's going to do it for the show. Shan, this was a blast, man. Thank you.
I love this. Good to have you.
And Cam, you were fine. All right. Thank you guys so much. If you want more Flames Talk, you guys know where you can go. And that is a show called Flames Talk, specifically on Fridays, the Eric Francis Hour. You see him on Flames Broadcast. You read him on Sportsnet.ca. Eric Francis goes solo every Friday at 5 p.m. for Flames Talk, the Eric Francis Hour. You guys know this by now. He is not afraid to ask the tough questions to get the information that you Flames fans want. It is a must listen for every Flames fan, and it's brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry has an $83 million positive impact, economic impact in Calgary annually. Visit thehorses.com. 18 plus. Please play responsibly. All right. That's it for me. I'll be back tomorrow hanging out with all of you guys. No idea what we're going to do, but it'll probably be fun here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.